This is Roger Lewis's first class for the teen session at Shippensburg Bible School. His subject for the week is God Manifestation, and the title of his first class is Yahweh, the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Hebrews 11, 8-16. Roger Lewis.
Well, thank you for that crisp introduction. One session before lunch, which is always the hardest one, isn't it? The third one in the morning. So I hope I can keep you on task and on focus. Now, as our chairman has just announced, our subject for this series is God Manifestation. Can I just ask for a show of hands of anyone who's heard a talk on God Manifestation before? Okay, so a reasonable number, but not everyone. Well, that's good, actually, because for those of you that have never heard this, I'm going to tell you that this is really important. How important, I'll tell you in just a minute. For those of you that have heard it, I hope that you might find that what you hear this morning and in subsequent sessions maybe takes a slightly different approach to the subject that you've already heard, and therefore gives you another focus and another aspect to it. So can I just start by saying this, just to get your attention. If you don't get this, you haven't got the truth. Is that quite focused? If you don't understand this subject, you haven't got the truth. Not at all. It doesn't matter what other doctrines you've got, what other doctrines you understand. It doesn't matter whether you've got the nature of Christ right, the coming of the kingdom right, the store of the atonement right. If you don't understand this doctrine, you haven't got the truth. This is the core and the center and the soul of what the truth is all about, God manifestation. And I'll tell you why that's so important, because it's the exact opposite of the world that you and I live in and breathe in every day of our lives. The exact opposite. We live in a world that's governed by, dominated by, infested by, saturated by humanism, which says it's all about me. It's about what life is, can do for me. It's all about my thinking and my thought processes and what I think and what I feel and what I imagine and what I want, because we go through life and we craft the reality of our own journey in life, because after all, every human being is indescribably precious and important. And God Manifestation says the very reverse. Is actually, it's not that you're not important, but you're only important in as much as you relate to this idea, God Manifestation, because if you don't, you won't be there in the future. Simple. Period. End of argument. It's the exact opposite. This is all about what God says and what God thinks, not about what you think or I think. It's about what God says. We live in a world that absolutely and utterly repudiates that spirit and that idea. So this is quite interesting. In fact, it's more than interesting, it's quite challenging. Because I think that what tends to happen, you know, even for Christadelphians, is we think, well, we know about all this humanism stuff, but we're not touched by that. After all, we're Christadelphians, good Christadelphians. Oh, yeah? I believe that our thinking is totally dominated by humanistic principles. Far, far more than we would ever imagine is possible. And that's why we've got to get back to this, because this is the foundation of what the truth is all about. So I hope I've sort of got your attention there in terms of the vitality of this particular subject. So let's start in Genesis chapter 12, because our theme today, as our chairman announced, is Yahweh the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And when we come to the book of Genesis in chapter 12, to a very famous passage that I hope that you'll already know, it says, does it not, concerning Abraham, says this in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. It says, now, the Lord had said unto Abraham, Yahweh had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So we know this, don't we? This is the great promise to Abraham. In thee shall all nations of the earth be blessed. And by the way, when it said in verse 2, I'll make of thee a great nation, he was going to make him a great nation by doing what? How would God make Abraham a great nation, do you think? Any thoughts on that? What do you think the answer to that is? How would God make Abraham a great nation? In very simple terms, what would he have to do that? Any thoughts? Yes.
Abraham would have to have kids.
You got it. That's it in a nutshell. Abraham would have to have kids. Who would have more kids? Who would have more kids? Until finally there were so many kids that there's a nation. In other words, if I can use a biblical phrase rather than kids, which although interesting is not biblical, is there was going to have to be a multitude developed from Abraham. And that idea of multitude is going to become important. So two ideas out of the promise to Abraham. He was going to be a multitude, verse 2, and in him all the families of the earth would be blessed, verse 3. Now you know that. You know that promise. All Christadelphians would know that promise. Now come and have a look at Genesis chapter 26 in verse 2. Because in Genesis 26 and verse 2, we're told this. It says in Genesis 26 and verse 2 that Yahweh appeared unto Isaac this time, not Abram, but Isaac, and said, "Go not down to Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. And now look at these key words, I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and I will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." So now we've got a promise being given to Isaac as well. And what was that promise? Verse 4, he was going to be multiplied, and in his seed all the nations of the earth will be blessed. That's the same promise as Genesis chapter 12, isn't it, to Abraham. Everyone happy with that? Same promise? Same promise now to Isaac in Genesis chapter 26. Well, here's the last one. It's in Genesis chapter 28. And in Genesis 28 it says, on the occasion of Jacob's journey to Padan Aram, it says in verse 13, "And behold, Yahweh stood above it and said, I am Yahweh Elohim of Abraham thy father, and the Elohim of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it unto thy seed, and thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south, and in thee and in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed." So now the promise comes to Jacob. The seed's going to be multiplied because it says it'll be as the dust of the earth and spread abroad everywhere, and also in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed. So now we've got three men being singled out for special involvement in terms of the promises of God. Just these three men. Does that same promise go to Joseph? Yes or no? No, it doesn't go to Joseph. So the promise is given to a father, Abraham, and to a son, Isaac, and to a grandson, three generations of just the one family. So there's got to be something interesting about these three men, that the promise of God would come to them in this special way. Repeat it in one, two, three generations. Now, by the way, I can't do this because of the constraints of what's in front of us, but hands up those that know about mind mapping. Okay, you've never heard of mind mapping? I cannot believe that you've never heard of mind mapping. Truly, really truly, you've never heard of mind mapping. Wow, that's unbelievable. Can I just talk for a moment about mind mapping, all right? So imagine for a moment that this is not a screen. You have to be careful with this because I do know of a brother that used a data projector, put something up on the screen, and in his excitement to explain something, grabbed a pen and went and pointed with arrows on what it was, and then didn't realize it wasn't a whiteboard, it was actually a projector screen, and that ecclesia never forgot that brother's visit. So I shan't do that this morning. But you see, imagine that we've got a circle in the middle here, and that circle says, Yahweh the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then out of that circle we bring a line. A line comes out, and then another line, and then another line. And on each of those lines, we write a piece of text, which is the main idea that's coming out. That's called a mind map. If you've ever done brainstorming on a whiteboard, that's sort of like mind mapping. So you start with an idea in the middle, and then you radiate lines of thoughts out from that circle. Now, what I'm going to suggest that you do in this third class is I want you to practice the power of mind mapping. Now, in order to do that, you're going to have paper and pencil. So if you haven't got that today, that's not a problem. But can you please make sure that by tomorrow you have blank paper, gorgeous, crisp, white blank paper, or any other colour if you like, and some writing instrument so that we can do a mind map together. Because mind mapping is very powerful for a couple of major reasons. And that's this. You may have heard this statistic before, but it's sort of quite spooky, really. If you don't take any notes from today, what do you think your level of retention is 24 hours from now in terms of the percentage of what I've said that you've remembered? You know what the stats are? Have a guess. What percentage of what I've said will you recall in 24 hours if you haven't taken any notes? Do you know? Yep. About 3%. Actually, I was going to be more generous. I was going to say, you know, closer to 10. So if it's 10%, say, do you know what that really means? Can I give you the inverse of 10%? Do you know what that really means? It means that you're going to forget 90% of what I've told you today, no matter how exciting, no matter how good, you're going to forget 90% of it in just 24 hours. Question, why would I bother flying from the other side of the world to tell you stuff that you're going to forget 90% about? Why would I bother doing that? New Zealand's a beautiful place. America's not too bad either, but, you know, it's a long way. Now, the benefit of mind mapping is that the strange thing is the moment we put pen to paper and we start writing notes down, why does our memory retention improve? Anyone know? Why does memory retention improve if we start writing notes? Yeah, you see it again, and somehow you write it in the mind more efficiently. The moment you start writing it here, it somehow gets written here, because you've had to think about the words. So you process it into the brain more intelligently, you drill it in deeper, and it stays longer. So writing notes is crucial if you're committed to growth and understanding. If you don't want to understand, you don't want to know, then sit there and don't take notes and forget most of it. But just remember that there's a consequence to that as well, which is that in 10 years' time, you'll also probably know about as little as you do now, unless you have some considered course of action to increase that knowledge. Now, the other good thing about mind maps is this. You know, they had a test where they took a bunch of people through a set of slides on a screen, just pictures of all sorts of different things, peoples, places, trees, mountains. They showed them about 750 slides. And a couple of days later, they brought them back, and this time they showed them I think about 1,500 slides, and they said, we want you to tick them as we go through. We want you to tick on the boxes. Which of these slides have you seen before, and which ones have you not seen before? Now, just imagine that, 750 slides. That's a lot of slides. So which ones have you seen? Which ones have you not seen? A couple of days later. What do you think the memory retention was in terms of the accuracy of what they recalled that they had definitely seen before? You'd like to have a guess? What do you reckon? Did someone say something? Did you say something? Have a guess. Pick a number, any number. That's a lot of slides. Yeah, what was the percentage recall? Yeah, percentage recall. So do you think they remembered 50% of them? 20%? 80%? What would you say? What do you reckon? 70%? Okay, any advance on 70%? 750 slides is a lot. Do you know the memory recall, you waiting, was 94%? 94% out of 750 slides. You know why? Because the brain thinks in pictures. They've discovered that. It thinks in pictures. So if you can imprint a picture in the brain, for some reason it'll store it away almost forever. And they believe that if they took those same people back and gave them 10,000 slides to see, they'll still have about 94% recall. Amazing. So if you can start to think in pictures, wow, the retention factor you could have is just astonishing. Now, that's what mind maps are all about. A mind map is a visual picture. And the benefit of a mind map is this. If you take notes in a linear form on a piece of paper, and you go like this, page two, what are you implying? What are you implying with that note taking? You are implying that the first page and the first point is the most important point. It's number one, number two, number three, number four, second page, number five, number six, number seven. But what if all of those points are equally interesting things that all radiate out from the central idea and there was no particular order to them at all? What if they were all simply true? A mind map shows all of those ideas radiating out from the center, and that might in fact be a much better way of understanding that whole concept. So if you can do a mind map and then to that add picture and colour, you can actually somehow mentally go, file, file. Now, just imagine if you could apply that not just to Bible study, but to lots of other stuff. I know of people, I know of students that have become A-class students and trounced their exams once they discovered the secret of mind mapping. They went from C-grade students to A-class once they figured out the power of mind mapping and the power of visualization of knowledge. So I know that's been a digression, but it's a really important one. So is that a deal? Tomorrow, paper, pencil, alert, ready to draw your first living mind map. And that's how we're going to take notes for these studies, because you'll find it's a great way to actually store and understand information. So let's come back to the story then. Three men singled out, just these three men. Now, when we come to Exodus chapter 3, Exodus chapter 3 clearly says something about that as well. Because in Exodus chapter 3, on the first occasion that the Yahweh name is going to be mentioned, and we're going to deal with this in more detail tomorrow, the record says in verse 6 of Exodus 3, God said, "Moreover," he said to Moses, "I am the God of thy father," or as Acts says when it quotes this passage, "the God of thy fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. So when God reveals himself to Moses, he doesn't just call himself the God of Abraham. No, no, he's the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. Did you notice that? Exodus chapter 3, verse 6. So he binds these three men together in some special way. And likewise, in verse 15 it says, "And God said, moreover, unto Moses, thus shall ye say unto the children of Israel, Yahweh Elohim of your fathers, the Elohim of Abraham, the Elohim of Isaac, and the Elohim of Jacob hath sent me unto you. This is my name forever." What's his name? Yahweh Elohim of the fathers, the Elohim of Abraham, the Elohim of Isaac, and the Elohim of Jacob. What we're being told is that the name of God is inextricably linked to these three men in some special way. We don't know why as yet. We don't know for what reason they're linked to the name of God, but they clearly are. Now, you might just like to take a note of these references, because I don't think we'll have time to look at them all today, but imagine this first mind map if you're taking one. So what was our circle in the middle? The circle in the middle, by the way, is always the topic that you're thinking about or talking about. So in this case, Yahweh, the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So what was the first line of our mind map today? Our first line was the promise of God to three men. Genesis 12, Genesis 26, Genesis 28. And now our second line is something like the name of God linked to these three men, or something like that. So Exodus chapter 3, the name of God linked to these three men. Well, now here's a little cascade of prophecies to add to that line on your mind map. So I'm going to give you three from the Old Testament and three from the New Testament. So David says this in 1 Chronicles 29, verse 18. Yahweh Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. And Elijah uses that name in the 1 Kings 18, verse 36. Yahweh Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. And Hezekiah uses that name in the 2 Chronicles chapter 30, and verse 6. Yahweh Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. And Christ refers to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in Luke chapter 20 in verse 37. And Peter refers to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in Acts chapter 3 and verse 13. And lastly, Stephen refers to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in Acts chapter 7, verse 32. So both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, as we come through the Bible, God is consistently referred to as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, how long do you think it is in time? How long do you think it is in time from Exodus chapter 3, when Moses first receives the name, the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and by the time Stephen gives his address in Acts chapter 7 in the New Testament, what span of time do you think travels between Moses and Stephen. You'd like to do some maths? What do you reckon? Time period. Any clues? What period of time have we travelled here? From Moses? Yeah? 3,000 is probably a bit long. It's probably about half of that, though. It's 1,500 years. Because the wilderness wanderings, when Moses brings Israel into the Promised Land, or towards the Promised Land, is about BC 1,450. Now, when does Stephen give his address? Probably about AD 36 or 37, so let's say another 50 years. So 1,450 years of BC and another 50 years of AD, we've got about 1,500 years from Moses to Stephen. Now, what's interesting is that throughout that whole 1,500 years, God is called the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's not called, well, what's he not called? He's never called the God of Joseph. Hey. A mysterious whiteboard.
Can I trust you with the markers?
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. So, can you follow me if I move to the whiteboard? Are you ready? Okay, here we go. No, it's all right. I'm just making sure that they can track me at the back. So here we go. So here is a primitive mind map. So in the middle, we've got that idea. And then we've got these ideas radiating out like this. Now, you see, the benefit of that is that no idea now is necessarily number one or number two. So we've got the three men. The promise and three men. And then if you imagine that a mind map is sort of like a tree, and so we've got this bit coming out here, and then it branches out into three more, which is Genesis chapter 12, Genesis chapter 26, and Genesis chapter 28, with those three references. So that would be the first line of a mind map coming out there. And now the second one, that the name of God is inextricably linked to these three men. And we started with Exodus 3, didn't we? And then we've got these references. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 3 in the Old Testament, 3 in the New Testament. It's a great way of learning to take notes because it's so visual. And the beauty of a mind map, one of the great beauties of a mind map is instead of having pages and pages, you've got like a snapshot that's all on the one page and you can visualize the whole thing instantly. Now the brain can take a photograph. Splash some color on that and you'll never forget it. If you learn to do study by writing mind maps, and then, you know what, a terrific way to do study is this, on any subject. You study up the subject, and you write a mind, you draw up a mind map, even out of your textbooks if you need to. So you say, here's all the information, and I've translated it into a mind map. Then what you do is, having looked at that mind map, you put it away, you take a fresh sheet of paper, and you recreate from memory that mind map. And you put it on another mind map. And then you get the old one out and you think, oh, I missed that line completely. And you add that in. And then you say, I missed that quote there and I missed that point there. But now the mind maps are the same. So then you put those two mind maps away and you write a third mind map. And this time you think, hey, I got it. And then you walk into the exam. And the exam, whatever it is, says, write an essay on this or whatever. And you go, click, file, visualization, mind map 3. Here it is. And away you go. It's all there. It's all magically photographed in the brain. Oh, you've got to learn the power of mind mapping. I promise you, it's marvelous. And it's very helpful for Bible study and Bible note-taking as well. So here's the point. Here's the point about these three men, which is our second line. God's name is somehow linked to these three men. Why? Why is that the case? Because notice this. God is never called the God of Jacob, Joseph, and Ephraim. Was that three generations of one family? Father, son, and grandson? Yes. He's never called that. God is never called the God of Aaron, Eleazar, and Phinehas, three generations of the priesthood. God is never called the God of Jesse, David, and Solomon, is he? Three generations of the kingly family. He's never called that, ever, not once. Why is he always called the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in both the Old Testament and the New Testament? For 1,500 years, why? Well, you see, I think there's a reason why. There's a very good reason why. Now, come and have a look at this. So here's the answer. Here's the answer to the puzzle. In Hebrews chapter 11. So, for our mind maps, you might want to take a third line now. So line one, the promise of three men, or the promise to three men. Line two, the name of God linked to these three men. And now, Hebrews chapter 11. Now, notice what Hebrews 11 says. Firstly, we want verses 8 and 9. It says, by faith Abram, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with, ooh, now notice this, with who? With Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. Now you see how that fits line one. That three men are given the same promise. That's what Hebrews 11 says. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are all heirs of the same promise. Somehow these three men are locked together, aren't they? Now why? Why are they locked together? Well, look what Hebrews goes on to say in verses 15 and 16. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, where was that, by the way? What was the country they came out of? What was the country they came out of? Egypt? Assyria? Ur of the Chaldees, correct? If they had been mindful of that country that they came out of, they may have had opportunity to return. Abraham or Isaac or Jacob could have said, look, it's just too hard in Palestine. Let's go back to Ur of the Chaldees. They might have done that, says Paul, but they didn't because they had faith. And now it says this, and this is the bit we want, verse 16. But now they desire a better country that is in heavenly, wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God. Ah, now who do you think the there is of verse 16? Who exactly do you think the there is of verse 16? What thinkest thou? And the answer is, I think he's still talking about these three men, you see. He's not ashamed to be called the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. Now, you see that word called in verse 16 of Hebrews 11. That word called is a very interesting word because it actually means to be surnamed. Now, can I ask you what your name is? Haley. Haley, isn't that a nice name? But if I was to say Haley, you know the first thing I would probably say, I'd say Haley who? So Haley who? Haley Harper. Oh, it's got a really nice sort of poetic ring to it, hasn't it? Haley Harper. It's got a nice cadence and a rhythm to it. But you see, Haley is the name of the person, but if I want to see, well, who is she and where is she and where does she fit in the bigger picture of things, I need to know it's Haley Harper. What's Harper? That's her surname. Now, what this passage in Hebrews says is that God surnamed himself upon the name of these men. He sort of added his name as a surname to theirs. Can you imagine that? What's your name? Cody. C-O-D-Y? Yep. That's in a really American name, isn't it? Cody. We don't have any Codys that I know of in New Zealand. So does Cody mean anything? Do you know? Has it got a meaning? It's just, but it's an American name, isn't it? Yeah, like Butch and Chuck. Yeah. So Cody it is. Now imagine this, just for a moment. I mean, this is how astonishing it is. Imagine if God said, I'm the God of Haley, or I'm the God of Cody, and that's written down somewhere in the Bible, I'm the God of Cody. You'd think, wow, imagine that. What honor has been given to this man or this woman that God would do that? Well, he did. He says, I'm the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. And he never did that to anyone else, just these three. Why? Why did he surname himself upon just these three men? Ah, well, there's got to be a reason. Well, that's what the rest of our talk's going to be about. And that's what the rest of the lines will be about. And here's the answer. Because... well, I've got a slide, so let's look at the slide first of all. God entitles himself Yahweh Elohim of your fathers, the Elohim of Abraham, the Elohim of Isaac, and the Elohim of Jacob. And I think this is the reason. You're watching? Watch carefully. Yahweh's purpose to manifest himself is revealed in the names and lives of the three patriarchs, hence the title, He Who Will Be Manifested, Yahweh Elohim, in the Mighty Ones of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Together these three form a prophecy of Yahweh's intention to be manifested as a father, Avraham, in a son, Yitzhak, and through a multitude, Yaakov. So these three men are going to be a parable of the whole purpose of God to manifest himself. Now let me show you how that story unfolds, because I think this is the key to this title, you see, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So these names were chosen to represent the memorial of his proposed manifestation in flesh and to identify his selection of the family through whom such mighty ones of the future would be revealed. Now, because I've spent so much time digressing onto the power of mind maps and memory retention and photographic slides and all manner of all sorts of other stuff completely unrelated to my topic, but vital for you to know, of course, otherwise I never would have digressed. Because of that, I can't follow all of these slides through in their complete detail, but I just want you to get the touch of them and put them on your mind map in terms of the next three lines. So here we go. I just think this is fantastic when you look at this. Absolutely fantastic that this is why God surnamed himself upon these three. So the God of Abraham is about Yahweh revealing himself as a father. Well, let me just show you some references. Let's come to that one first of all. We won't look at all of these. You may want to get them down if you can, if you're swift and nimble with your fingers. But Genesis chapter 17 says this. So this is how Abraham first turns up in the divine record, as far as the meaning of his name. It says in Genesis chapter 17 and verse 3, it says, "And Abraham fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, As for me, behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. Neither shall thy name be called Avram." You want to know what Avram means? What does Abram mean? You want to know? Just Abram. Not Abraham, just Abram. You want to got a marginal note what Abram means? Abram means either high father or lofty father, but it's the word father. What does Abraham mean? What does Abraham mean? The margin of your Bible should tell you. The father of what? Father of a great multitude. For, says verse 5, a father of many nations have I made thee. So how is Abraham presented in the record to us? He's presented to us as a father. Abraham the father. Well, as we go through the record, you'll find that the whole of the Bible presents Abraham as a father. Let's come to this last passage. We'll skip those middle ones and come to Romans chapter 4. Now, look how clear this is. So this is the special feature of Abraham. I am the God of Abraham. Well, I think here's why. In Romans chapter 4, verse 1, it says, "What shall we say then that Abram, our father, as pertaining to the flesh, hath found?" So see what he's called? He's the father, Father Abraham. Now, look at verse 11 of Romans chapter 4. "And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had yet being uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all them that believe, though they be not circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed unto them also." And, verse 12, "and that he might be the father of circumcision to them who are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had." Verse 16 at the end. "But to that also which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all, as it is written, I have made thee a father of many nations." You think that's quite clear? Abraham's a father? I think so. I think that's quite clear. That's how the scripture presents him. So here's the key, you see. Abraham is presented in the record as being particularly the father of the promises. from whom the primary blessing would flow. And so Yahweh led Abraham through the emotional experience of fatherhood so that he might enter into the very feelings of God as the father of his own beloved son. So Abraham, from start to end, is referred to as the father, the great father of the nation. And the purpose of God was to reveal himself, firstly, as a father. So I am the God of Abraham represents the first stage of God manifestation, God's intention to be revealed, as it were, in himself. Now, if that's true of Abraham, I'll give you one guess as to what Isaac would represent, because it's pretty obvious, isn't it? What's Isaac got to be? I'm the Elohim of Isaac. Yahweh declared in a son. Now, shall we just have a look at that? Come and have a look at Genesis chapter 21. Genesis chapter 21. So here's the story of Isaac entering the scene. It says in Genesis 21 verse 1, "And Yahweh visited Sarah as he had said, and Yahweh did unto Sarah as he had spoken, for Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age." Verse 3, "And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him." Do you think that Isaac's presented as a son in the book of Genesis? The son, not the father, the son. By the way, was Isaac a father? Of course he was. Yeah, Jacob. But the focus of how Isaac turns up in the divine record is that he was the promised son. In Genesis 24, Eliezer goes on a mission to find a bride for Isaac, and he says in Genesis 24, "My master's wife has given him a son in his old age, Isaac." Well, actually, Isaac by that stage was probably, let me think about that. Isaac at that stage was probably about 37. So, "My master's wife hath given him a son in his old age." He wasn't a boy anymore, but the focus of the Bible is upon the sonship of Isaac. Have a look at this one in James chapter 2. So we're making the point here that this is both Old Testament and New Testament is consistent in terms of this idea. Now in James chapter 2, it says this in verse 21. It says, "Was not Abraham our father..." Oh, did you notice that? "Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he'd offered Isaac his son upon the altar?" So who's the father? Abraham. And who's the promised son? Isaac. So he's presented in the record as a son. Even though Isaac himself was of course a father, as far as the Bible record is concerned, he's seen as preeminently the miraculous son in whom the promises would begin. So Yahweh led Isaac through the atmosphere of a godly family to be a faithful and obedient son, manifesting his father's qualities. And that very much is going to be the focus of the most famous passages about Isaac, his sonship. So that's the next stage, you see, of God manifestation. God said, "I intend to be revealed in myself as a father, and then, first and foremost, I'm going to be revealed in just one son, my son, the promised son, the miracle son." And that promised son would be prefigured by Isaac. "I am the God of Isaac." Well, if that's true, then what do you make of Jacob then? What must Jacob be in that sequence of thought? He's got to be, well, let's have a look, shall we? So Yahweh, the Elohim of Jacob, is all about Yahweh being proclaimed through a multitude. Now, would you like to see that in Jacob's life? I think we've just got enough time to sneak through two or three passages before we close the session and the lunch doors open. So come to Genesis, and this time to Genesis chapter 28. Funny thing, you know, but once you lock onto something like this, you see it popping up in the record, and you think, oh, there it is, oh, there it is again, oh, there it is again. But you've got to see it first. You've got to see the key that unlocks the puzzle. And the key that unlocks the puzzle is that these three men were chosen to have God's name surnamed upon them, not because they were necessarily more faithful than David and Jesse and Solomon, or Aaron and Eleazar and Phinehas, but because their very lives became a parable of the purpose of God. Now, in Genesis 28, we're told that Isaac called Jacob, verse 1, and he sent him off to go and find a wife. But this is what he says. Genesis 28, verse 3. And God Almighty bless thee, and make thee fruitful, and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a multitude of people. Ooh, there it is. Now you see that word multitude in Genesis chapter 28. Do you know that that word multitude in the Hebrew is the word kahal, K-A-H-A-L, kahal. And why that's important is that's the word that's going to be used for the whole of the Old Testament story of the congregation of Israel. All the congregation of Israel was the kahal. Well, guess who began the kahal? Guess who the kahal comes from? It doesn't come from Abraham so much, or Isaac so much, as from Jacob. Jacob is going to bring forth the multitude of the congregation of Israel. Yahweh bless thee that thou mayest be for a multitude of people. Let's come and have a look at another reference in Genesis chapter 35. In Genesis 35, it says this in verse 9. God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Padan Aram. So now he's returning. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee. Now you see that word company in Genesis 35 verse 11. You'd never guess what that word is in the Hebrew, would you? It's kahal, the multitude. Be fruitful and multiply, a nation and a multitude of nations shall be of thee, Jacob, it says in Genesis chapter 35. So just one more in Genesis chapter 48. And this is at the end of his life now. Now we've come to the end of Jacob's life. And this is what it says in Genesis 48 verses 3 and 4. Maybe reading from verse 2 for connection. It says, one told Jacob and said, behold, thy son Joseph comes unto thee. And Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed, because he's an old man now, one last effort. And Jacob said unto Joseph, verse 3, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said unto me, behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people, kahal. Jacob never forgot that promise, you see, even to his dying day, that from him would come the multitude of the promised seed. In Acts chapter 7, we're told this. Don't turn it up, I'll just tell you what it says. Watch my hands. It says, and Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob. And now what do you think it says? And Jacob begat... Now, what do you think it says? You would like to have a guess? Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. Not just one son, not just one boy. The 12 patriarchs. In other words, the beginning of the whole kahal of Israel springs forth out of Jacob. Acts chapter 7. He was the beginning of the multitudinous seed, you see. So what's that third great stage? That Yahweh would finally be proclaimed through a multitude. And so Jacob is presented in the record as being especially the channel through whom the family would be multiplied into a multitude, the family of God. Yahweh led Jacob through the trials and difficulties of many children as God manifestation was seen in the multitude of his offspring. So the thing about that, which I think is interesting, is that none of that came by mistake. I'll just put that back on. None of that came by mistake or accident. God chose these three men to put his own name upon them because they were a parable of his own purpose. Yahweh manifested in himself as a father. Yahweh declared in a son. And Yahweh proclaimed through a multitude. Now, that's a really good, simple, crisp mind map of information. Just imagine if you had that marked up into a little mind map. You could even put that at your back of the back of your Bible, by the way. You could slot that in and draw that up in the back of the Bible, and you've got the whole beginning of the story of God's manifestation in these three men. So that's the beginning of our studies. And God willing, what we're going to do in our subsequent sessions is tomorrow we're going to look at I'm the God of Abraham, and the next day we're going to look at I'm the God of Isaac, and you probably don't need to tell me what we're going to do the day after that. So thank you for that. Go and enjoy lunch.